My entire career has been based around finding work via social media or the internet. So it's in my nature to just go seeking opportunities online.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Promote the Hell Out of It. My name is Misael Trujillo and this is the podcast where I talk to guests about subjects we should all be talking about, promoting and understanding. And this episode is really special to me personally because I talk to Jane Robinson. She is my partner in business and in life. And in case you didn't know, she helps with so many aspects of the podcast. So I really have her to help for making this a living and breathing thing. And we cover so much ground on the podcast, including her background as a beauty blogger, how things have developed and changed, and the last year and a half that we've spent traveling first Asia and now the UK with the help of trusted house sitters, the difficulties in doing this, the difficulties in leaving our flat in Barcelona and putting everything in a storage locker, and hopefully also cover a load of tips that will help you be able to do similar things if you were to want to do so. And this episode takes into account all of Jane's experience in marketing, in content creation, in strategy. She worked in London for top agencies including Rabbit, Mission and Exceed. She's had brand experience with companies like Bare Minerals, ASOS, Thought Park, Kath Kidston, Sheer Moisture and more. We run a digital company together helping companies with all their digital and content needs called Kichink. She has her blog website up called CMK. And we run Food Scouts together, a company that does merch. So I can testify to the fact that Jane's incredibly busy. And we obviously talk about how to cope with this whilst traveling and how difficult it can be at times and give some tips to help. This episode is brought to you by Nextand, our friends who we met whilst traveling in Asia. And we actually talk about meeting them, getting the sponsorship and how all that worked out and why we're so excited to work with them too. So please, please check out their products. The link is in the description, along with a cheeky little discount code for you all. And I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My entire career has been based around finding work via social media or the internet.
I wanted to start talking about the 4-hour work week by Tim Ferriss because it keeps on coming up in the podcast. And yet, you finished it. And I didn't. And you finished it a few days probably before we actually decided to try saving up to go travelling.
Yeah, because basically we're like, can't take this book travelling. Apparently it's got all the answers in. People that we trust and respect have recommended it to us. I thought I'd best prioritise that to help progress things. Like, I was really anxious about going travelling. Like, I didn't think I was brave enough. I didn't think that I'd be able to eat properly. I didn't think that I could afford it. So it was really reassuring to read something very logical that brought together lots of different people's experiences. And then obviously the other stuff that we researched off the back of that book kind of helped confirm that it was possible without having a lot of money or without having a lot of confidence. Like, and it wasn't gonna be as scary as it might have seemed when I was like 10 years ago or whatever.
And do you think that when you read, because I guess you'd read half the book when we decided to go traveling and then you sort of sped up to try and finish it, but that first half of the book, was it the concept of it, how easy he puts the concept of working remotely, that helped you, or was it something else about it?
Well, to be honest, a lot of the stuff in 4-hour work week isn't necessarily always relevant to us because we don't have a big, massive company like e-commerce set up, which is obviously a really good strategy if you want to do the 4-hour work week, and it's something that we often talk about,
the
limitations of budget or resources. So I wouldn't say it was the main inspiration. I think it was, like I say, it was just a reassurance that someone who's intelligent and successful has made this work, so maybe I should try it.
For sure, yeah. And what about the concept of, because it really helped me, and I'm interested to see how much of an effect it had on you, the concept of analysing what you want to be doing in life, and then finding the cheapest place to actually get that.
Yeah.
Did that help you? Because for me, that was huge.
I think the things that helped me the most is actually still the article from Sam Cookney about him commuting from Barcelona to London. That still sticks with me as something that was like, oh, wow, okay, maybe staying put isn't necessarily the best thing all the time. Like, it's absolutely bizarre that it would be more cost effective and more efficient with your time to get a flight from Barcelona to London every day instead of living in London.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that really changed my mindset. And then obviously a lot of the YouTube channels that we researched on as well, where they break down the cost of living in these places, it changes your perspective and you're like, okay, maybe I am being screwed over if I stay in the UK or if I stay in Spain. Maybe I should go and explore other options.
Yeah, I think that's what did it for me, definitely. So do you think then, after the Sam article, we made the move to Barcelona and we were there for 2 years. And when we first got there, obviously, we were in the circumstance where it was a lot cheaper because the pound was still quite high and we were getting a good value in the euro for it. So was that part of the experience that made you go, yeah, I can see why that's a good idea. We should do it again now that the situation's changed.
Yeah, well, the whole Barcelona thing was a bit of a fuck up, really, because of wonderful Brexit. And if we had a lot of opportunity there, like there was a lot of creatives and businesses that were very aligned to our thinking. But obviously when it becomes unsustainable to stay there, you can't stay there. You have to think of options. So I thought, why not? I might not get a chance to go travelling again, so I might as well try it now, seeing as the other option was to go back to the UK, which I wasn't feeling either at that time.
For sure, but I know it's... How do I put this? I think that it's easy to look at these things at Brexit. We were obviously, and we still are, very angry at the situation. That's one of the dogs jumping off the sofa. Obviously angry at the situation. But at the end of the day, you've just described that it basically pushed you to do something that otherwise you might have waited or never have done.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm grateful to have been put in that stressful situation to some extent. Like, I wish that I had been able to do without as much stress.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I say, like, when you don't know what to do, you might as well try something new rather than keep slogging away at something that's not going your way.
Yeah, and part of the reason I think that's important is because it's the conversation I had with Jonathan McDonald about reevaluating how we see things that have happened sometimes. Like, we talk about it a lot, and it's something I think that has scarred us a lot, was how much our circumstance suddenly changed after Brexit. But what we don't generally talk about is how much we learn and how many new things we come out of every time something that crappy happens or that shit happens, how much stronger we come out of the other end.
Of course, and like I say to you many times, I'm a totally different person to what I was like 10 years ago or even like 6 years ago. Like, a lot of stuff has occurred in that time that has opened my mind or like taught me new lessons or made me like rethink what direction to go in life. And going to Asia and now doing the pet sitting is all just adding to that experience. Yeah, I might still be a bit confused about what that end goal is, but at least I'm learning stuff and things are interesting every day. I'm glad to have been put in the difficult circumstance.
So let's sort of shift it a bit and think of, if someone was listening to this who wanted to replicate what we kind of did, there were some things I think we did that made it more affordable and cheaper to do. And from the start is, when you decide to go traveling, you've obviously got a flat. So how did it feel for you when we found the solution? We weren't sure of what to do with our stuff. When we found the solution of putting in a storage locker, how did you feel about that initially?
Well, fortunately, by that point, we had watched quite a lot of content to do with minimalism and travelling light and backpacking and stuff. So I was kind of already getting to grips with the concept of having to temporarily go minimalist, and it's not something I ever thought that I would do or that I would be interested in doing. Like, I have a history of collecting, and I like clothes and I like makeup, like most girls, I guess, but I was willing to make those sacrifices to see what would happen and to take this opportunity that I might not have again. And it was emotional and it was upsetting seeing like your entire identity and like life get packed up into basically a shed and not knowing when you might see it again.
And what about in terms of the actual how it works, like financially, was it, do you feel it was the right option? Do we save enough, like, by having things in a locker to go travelling?
Of course, it's ridiculous. Like, how can you compare paying, like, €850 a month plus, most people pay more than that, on rent?
Well, it's gone up to almost 1,000 now.
Yeah, and that's not including utilities. To paying, like, €60 to €70 a month for a shed, and to have that freedom of movement, that freedom to just go wherever and not worry about your stuff. It's there when you decide to come back to it.
And just for the sake of listeners, because of describing it as a shed, how do you feel, like, does your stuff feel secure? Like, do you feel secure with the place? Is it a good place to leave it?
It's a wonderful setup. It's very, we're using Blue Space. It's very much like most of the storage facilities that you've seen in the UK. They're usually on an industrial estate. There's loads of lockers of all different sizes. I say it's a shed because that's roughly the capacity specific unit. But it's very clean, it's very dry, I don't have any concerns, we've got a padlock on there, they've got CCTV, we've got insurance, like, there's not much that can go wrong with it, in my mind, and I don't really want to think about could go wrong with it.
I mean, we've been back twice in, a year and a half, and it's been absolutely fine both times, and it's good service, so in that sense, I feel pretty comfortable with it. And then next, looking at buying flights to fly out. I think part of what helped us was the flexibility of being able to choose any date of the week and keep it quite flexible to keep it cheap. Was that useful for you, or did it make you feel pretty stressed out having to leave things quite open?
Well, since we've been sort of remote working and freelancing for quite a long time before the travel concept came to mind, I think we're pretty prepared to be flexible with that. Like, we can get stuff done around that. So one of the advantages of being freelance is that you can switch and change your work schedule to suit what your personal life is doing. And that's something we embraced very well in that situation.
I think so, yeah. I think it felt quite natural to keep being flexible. And I think we have done for a long time. What about not having a return date? Because that to me felt strange. Like, not knowing what the end goal was, how did that feel to you?
Well, we were very sensible. We saved up enough money to afford the return flight, and we weren't going to touch that until we needed to buy a return flight. So I wasn't worried about that. And I think that's a really good safety mechanism that anyone who's worried about traveling should use. Like, it is difficult to save money, but if you can just cover your return flight and sort of like your first couple of weeks of getting there, I think that's reasonable. And obviously that amount that you have to save depends on what kind of experience you can afford to have or you want to have.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you find the traveling, like starting with that first huge sort of 17-hour journey out and having to land and the time difference and all of that kind of stuff?
Well, fortunately for me, I had done a couple of long-haul flights before, like quite a long time ago, just to Canada and America once each, so I kind of knew a bit more what to expect than maybe you did. Well, obviously, you know me, I don't like travel days. They're long and they're stressful and they're a bit boring and they're usually overpriced and you normally eat badly. But overall, I was okay with it because I was excited to go to Asia. I always wanted to go to Asia. I didn't think I was going to ever, so I was excited. And like we were saying the other day, the service on the flight was excellent. We got fed, we watched a bunch of movies, we played games. It was fun.
Is there any advice you'd have for someone who was doing that kind of thing for the first time? Because I struggled with it. I hated being on a flight for that long.
Well, there's a lot of like health and well-being things that you can do to prepare, and like we did do some of them, such as like, and these are just good general health tips regardless of what you're doing, not just for travel, and that's making sure you're drinking enough water, not overdoing alcohol, like preparing with like probiotics or like any multivitamins that you know that you, your personal body will benefit from. And that's something that we learned from Tim Ferriss as well, because he talks a lot about sort of body hacking, life hacking.
Alex Travelbum, who I had on the podcast, yeah, he talks about it on his as well.
Yeah, so there's lots of things, little things that you can choose, and that will all be personal to the individual, but to prepare. And there's certain skincare things that you might want to take with you, or specific clothes that you might want to wear on the flight so that you're more comfortable to avoid some of the health problems that can occur on a long haul flight.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So what do you think is essential for you, or was essential for you to have in your backpack?
Well, specifically for flying, or
in general whilst traveling for such a long period of time?
Well, like I say, like I kind of was already on the minimalist wavelength just before going, partly because I wasn't really buying that much new stuff anyway. I was enjoying what I already had, like especially from the beauty side of having worked in the industry and been a beauty blogger. Obviously had a bit of a backlog of stuff
to use. Of products to get through, yeah.
So for me, having had that period of my life where I had access to a lot of stuff and a lot of nice stuff, and then have a period of life where those things aren't in my budget anymore, or I don't get sent stuff, it was kind of refreshing to have a period of time where I was like, okay, let's reevaluate what items actually matter.
And what items would you say they were?
It's really, I don't know, like I still haven't figured that out fully. Like, especially when you work at home and you're not socializing that much, like you don't necessarily need that much because you don't worry as much about your appearance or like what people are gonna think and stuff like that. So I just made sure I had a few varieties of outfits so that I had comfort and also like some style. Yeah. And then like in terms of like beauty products, it's probably like the most lo-fi I went in ages. Just used coconut oil and like mineral powders that had SPFs in, like very simple things. And then, as you know, during our time in Asia, I ended up giving up shampoo completely. I'm quite fussy with my beauty products anyway, and it was a faff to carry all these things, especially with when you're doing hand luggage only and you have restrictions on liquids and stuff. So it worked quite well to just kind of experiment with it, and it kind of made me reevaluate everything that I knew about marketing and the beauty industry and the fashion industry and all sorts of things.
I think we need to mention Tiger Balm in there, because you're gonna get bitten and it's gonna be itchy and it's gonna be horrible, and that was a savior when you figured that out. I'm not sure where you'd read it, or if you already knew about it
already. I just never used it before. I'd like, it's quite an iconic Asian beauty product, like a natural medicine thing. I can't remember what it's made of right now. And you can buy it in England, you can buy it pretty much anywhere in the world. But one of the things that I did get excited about in Asia, which you know very well about, is the beauty and wellness stuff and the food. There's like so much variety, and they have a different way of thinking about things, and it's just really interesting. So yeah, Tiger Balm was a good staple that we definitely restocked on a few times.
Absolutely.
It was great for any kind of cuts or bruises or bug bites, and also if you've got a headache, it's a temple balm. Yeah.
So I want to touch on the first 24 hours that you spent in Asia. We were shattered. We couldn't get into the hotel till midday. That's one of the big lessons I learned, was be careful not to be like, yeah, it'll be fine. You're going to be absolutely shattered. You can't wait till midday to get in bed.
No, you need to, like, there's really mixed opinions on it. Like some people say, like, just go arrive and then immediately adapt to whatever time it is where you arrive. I can't even remember what time it was when we arrived.
We arrived at 7 in the morning, and we couldn't check in till
like after lunch.
After lunch. And Bangkok's huge.
Yeah, Bangkok's huge.
And we were excited.
And we were excited, and it was really hot and humid and smelt funny. And like, it was just massive culture shock. I don't know why, but we ended up walking really far through Chinatown, which is probably not the best first place to go if you don't know what to expect from Asia, because it is a massive culture shock and is not representative of the entire of Bangkok.
No, absolutely, yeah.
It was exciting and we were glad to be there. But yeah, we were shattered and we ended up just walking around shopping malls because there was air conditioning.
Yeah.
For what ages.
I do remember, though, is after we finally checked in and had some nice food there and stuff, was going out of the hotel, which is on Chinatown. Can you remember
Yaowarat Road?
Yaowarat Road. It was at Shanghai Mansion.
Yeah, we stayed at Shanghai Mansion.
For 3 nights, yeah. And walking out that night and suddenly all the lights are on, all the neon lights are on.
Yeah, it looks epic.
And all the food is out and it's so different to 7 o'clock in the morning when you get there and you suddenly understand why this place is so unique.
Yeah.
It's like nothing I'd ever seen before.
It was kind of the perfect introduction to what to expect, really, like having seen the whole day. Like, because at Shanghai Mansions, they had the open front bar and we had tokens for like half price cocktails or something.
Yeah.
And they had live music on, so you could sit and look out onto the street and kind of get a vibe without being like right in the hustle and bustle of it. It looked like you were on a film set. It was like, yay, we're in an anime.
It's true.
It was ridiculous.
So what was the first point where you struggled with something? What was the first thing that you were like, this is difficult? Whilst travelling?
Probably, first off, how much we walked. Because I think Bangkok was probably... We got used to it pretty quick. Although it is massive and stressful and you walk a lot, there is a lot of comfort there as well. And that's a really good way to intro yourself to somewhere new. Because if you feel crap or you don't know what to eat, you can go to a shopping mall that looks like any shopping mall in America or England. But... Well, no, actually, way more epic.
Than England, yeah, I don't think there's anything quite like that
the
here.
The most epic shopping malls you'll ever see, and they will have every brand that you know from anywhere in the world there. So you can pretty much go and eat any food you can think of, and you can get comfort. Whereas maybe if you started somewhere like Vietnam, you would have maybe a more trickier time of dealing with that culture shock.
Yeah. Okay, so let's touch on, because you mentioned Vietnam, let's touch on the countries that we actually covered in the 9 months we were there.
Okay, so we already mentioned Bangkok. So, should we go country from country? Should we cover Thailand?
You can do Thailand, yeah, you can do...
Let's start with Thailand.
If you remember place by place, that's amazing.
Yeah, of course
awesome.
I do. I have a good memory. So in Thailand, we went to Bangkok many times, because obviously big airport, it's good interchange. But we actually went to Chiang Mai much more, which is a much smaller city. It's very popular with digital nomads and popular with other Asian tourists as well. So it has a good mix of traditional Thai and the comfort.
Yeah.
But it also has a totally different feel to other parts of Thailand. And it's obviously a lot cooler because it's up in, near the mountains, and it's smaller, so you can get to more places walking. So it's a lot less stressful than being in Bangkok. But the airport there is really good, and you can get to pretty much everywhere in Asia from there pretty easily. So it's a super convenient spot. Where else do we go in Thailand? We also went to Phuket.
Yeah.
Which I was a bit nervous about, because I had this impression that it was like the Ibiza of Thailand or the Mallorca of Thailand.
But we didn't end up going to the major city, did we?
No, we avoided Patong, which is the famous sort of like party town, and I'm sure some people have a wonderful time there.
Well,
and we probably would on the right day.
Yeah, for sure.
But when you've got stuff to do and you're travelling, you sometimes want a more chilled pace of life. So we went down south to a more family-friendly area of Kata and Karon Beach.
Which was gorgeous, and we
it
got some amazing
beautiful
sunsets and saw bats, and it was awesome, yeah. And don't forget Krabi, which we didn't actually go to Krabi, but we flew into Krabi and then stayed
Aonang.
In Aonang.
Oh yeah, we went there,
twice.
Couple of times, yeah.
Yeah, and then we did the video on the island Koh Yao Noi. That was really cool, with Treehouse.
Treehouse Villas and Paradise Koh Yao Noi.
Koh Yao Noi.
We'll put the links
Noi.
In
the links
description.
Are in the description. What was the standout thing? Because that island was obviously ridiculous. It's got a very small population. The place we stayed was ridiculously beautiful. We got a private boat back to Krabi afterwards. So what was the standout thing for you from that
trip? The island, from Thailand in general, my favourite things were probably Chiang Mai, and being on that island resort, because it was ridiculous, and we'll probably not get to do that many times in our life, because it's an expensive place. And yeah, we got lucky with our connections there that we got it gifted.
Let's talk about what we did to get that.
So yeah, so obviously my background is in blogging, and we both work within digital marketing, so we kind of know how PR and influencer stuff works. So as we were traveling, we attempted to do the travel YouTuber thing.
Badly.
It's a lot of work. Like I say, like, shout out to all those YouTubers who are doing that full time. That is a lot of work, and they deserve what they get in most cases. But yeah, trying to get that started was tough, but we made progress on the Instagram front. We took a lot of photos. But anyway, we got gifted a free night at two different luxury resorts in Thailand in exchange for taking some photos and doing some videos. But we pitched it more along the lines of, I have a blog and a Pinterest that is successful, rather than the typical, we're a YouTuber, because we're not.
And I want to kind of stop on that a bit, because I think it's important to be able to maximize what you actually have going for you, if that makes any sense. And I obviously talked to Dirk on the podcast recently about the value of actually using content creators as opposed to just looking at metrics. But at the end of the day, a lot of companies are still looking at metrics. So in this case, I think you focused on your Pinterest numbers, which is obviously exciting for people, and it's something that generally isn't getting pitched as much as maybe Instagram or YouTube. Do you think that was the right thing to do, to find the niche that you had? Is that what you'd recommend to start off with?
Well, you know, I personally feel uncomfortable asking for free stuff anyway.
Yeah.
So I found
you have
it
to have some value.
Value. Yeah. And in an ideal world, like, you could pay for a stay at a hotel because you're a good photographer, but that's not how it works. People have bills to pay, so it is a bit of an awkward situation. But yes, like, I would like to see brands and creators consider where their values lie, rather than focusing on specific platforms. So being like, oh, I want to be a video creator, so I have to be a YouTuber and get 1,000 followers before anyone will take me seriously. Like, if you're good at making content, pitch your quality of your content rather than your platforms. And if you do have a platform that's successful, like, focus in on that rather than trying to do like a typical cookie cutter influencer approach, because like, we can't rely on these platforms to be how they are forever. So you're best owning your content rather than owning some statistics on someone else's platform.
Absolutely. And I kind of want to focus in on a few things there, and I think that I almost disagree on some of them, and we've talked about them before in terms of asking for free stuff. Well, at the end of the day, if the value of what you're given is of worth, is something that's useful to the company, then we go back to the conversation I had with Benita about sharing economy. Like, people are obsessed at the moment with being like, well, no, you should be charging. They should be charging for the hotel. We should be charging for our photography skills. But wait a second, you need a place to stay. They need Instagram content. We know people need content constantly. I don't see any problem with being honest with what you can deliver, making sure it's of good quality, and creating a community where we can have services in exchange for something that's worthwhile.
No, and I do agree with that, and I really would love to see more of a sharing economy become more mainstream. Like, I've spoken to you before about my time as a photographer and as a fashion model. Like, I never paid for any photos in my portfolio, and loads of the shoots I worked on, most people were working for free because they were passionate about creating something valuable and of quality. And many of those people I worked with have gone on to do marvellous, amazing things off the back of endless hours of work that they did for free out of passion.
Yeah.
And I think that's being lost now. And we talk about it a lot. Like, people are so, and like, it's really difficult, because I know that it's difficult to survive currently. Like, there's a lot of expenses to existing and a lot of things that we think we need. but wouldn't it be easier if we all just like helped each other out a little bit more?
Yeah, and I'm not saying to ever work for free. That's not ever my point. You know, I'm highly, highly against that. And we've been very lucky in finding people who pay us for our time and have faith in that. And we'll touch on some of the people we met along the way in a bit. But I think there is an attitude towards not wanting to mention the things that are done for free at the moment, and wanting very much to pretend that you always have to charge and even pass up on opportunities that you want, because it's not okay to do it for free, and it's not okay to talk about that. And you've mentioned to me a lot about your origins of blogging, and you were doing that because that was your passion as opposed to being given anything, right?
Yeah, well, when I started blogging, it was because I thought I might be a journalist or something one day, so it was just a way to practice writing. I didn't think anyone on the internet was going to read that stuff. It was just a link to send to potential magazines.
So when did you notice that you could start getting stuff for free?
Okay, so I started my blog in 2009, like just after uni. So it was when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do after uni, because I kind of knew that I probably wouldn't work in film and television at that time. So it was very quiet for a while, like, and I'd write about things that was happening in Leeds. And then when I moved to London, that's when it started to change the dynamic a bit. I don't think I ever really got anything for free when I was in Yorkshire. But when I moved to London, there was obviously all the PR agencies are there, all the brands are there. So then when you started using social media and started advertising that you're a blogger in London, that's when PR started finding me. And I wasn't approaching them, they were approaching me. Or it'd be like a blogger friend was going to an event and they had a plus one, so you'd go with them and then you'd meet the PRs and then you'd become part of their network. And it was really cool, and it was very much passion driven. Nobody was expecting anything because they were just all just excited to be there. Like, it was just a new thing.
So how far along would you say it was before you started, as opposed to finding it was passion driven, finding that you expected to be given stuff, well, not such expected, that it started becoming more of an argument trying to figure out what you got given and how much you got paid versus what was given to the company? Because from what you're saying, that wasn't the case towards the start.
No, well, I guess during my time blogging, I started to see more of a personal affinity with like personal blogging than with journalism. Like, I started to see kind of like, because I was working in marketing as well, specifically in beauty, I could see the inner workings of magazines and journalism, and it kind of like put me off a bit, I guess, because I could see how easily like opinions could be like bought. I didn't really like it, like, and I met a few like journalist people who were just kind of was a bit disappointed in, and it just all seemed very inaccessible to become a journalist at that time. So I was like, oh well, I'll just, seeing as I'm getting invited to events, maybe I'll just embrace being a blogger for a bit and see if I can make that a job, because at this point I still didn't know what I wanted to do long term. So why wouldn't you take the opportunity? It was like the perfect combination of like my modelling and my photography background and my like media training that I had from a degree, but I had complete control over it. It was very empowering and it was very important at that time. But as we've talked about before, it became very corporate very fast, and then there was all these like unwritten rules coming up and like blogger drama as we know it, and I just lost the passion for it, just because it sort of became a competition between who could get the best free stuff or who was getting invited to what event or who was friends of who, and I wasn't into that, like.
And by the time we've gone traveling, let's touch on kind of the opposite of that, how to work with people that you build an interaction with that's very genuine and organic. So whilst out there, we made a connection with someone to do a photo shoot, and it was you that connected with Sam, right? How did that get started?
Okay, so my entire career has been based around finding work via social media or the internet. So it's in my nature to just go seeking opportunities online. And I met Sam on the Digital Nomad Girls forum on Facebook. It's a Facebook group, and they also have sub Facebook groups for certain areas. And I met her specifically on the Chiang Mai group, which is an extremely active group. Some really interesting ladies in that group. I think my friend Lindsay, who we met up with, may have introed me to it.
We'll talk more about them in a bit as well.
So Sam had just posted in this group saying, oh, I need some people in Chiang Mai to take photos. I'll give you some products and we'll hang out and I'll give you a bit of money for your time. And obviously we needed to buy food. So I was like, okay, let's see how this goes.
Okay, so from there, fast forward. Well, let's first of all, we haven't even mentioned what products or who they are. So let's mention that
Sam?
First. Who is Sam? Yeah, who is Sam? Because that's a good place to start.
Sam is works for Nextstand and Waterwell, and she was responsible for their European market. So she was creating content that was aligned with like digital nomads and travel bloggers. So we really suited her vibes at the time. And then obviously when we had the day at the photo shoots, we like traveled around to different co-working spaces, which was really interesting, in Chiang Mai, took some photos, hung out, got to know each other, and we just got on really, really well. So we just stayed in touch. Sam bought a couple of our Food Scouts t-shirts. She's been wearing that on the gram.
Excellent. And then fast forward 6 months, and we send Sam the podcast, and obviously now Nextstand are sponsoring the podcast, which is really cool. How do you feel that relates back to what you were talking about before with blogging? How do you feel that's a more organic way to interact and actually earn an income and still get paid for your time, as opposed to what you were doing with the blog, for example?
So with the blog stuff, I got a bit tired of going to events and feeling not welcome or not included. Whereas before, when it had been a bit more, underground, before it was cool, the old school bloggers, it was much more like chilled and relaxed and everyone knew each other. But like I say, when money started getting involved in the blogger stuff, it got all a bit competitive and a bit nasty, and I wasn't into that. The way that we met Sam, to me, was much more authentic. It was, like we were saying, not quite sharing economy, but we were helping each other out because we had similar goals, we had similar interests, and we believed in each other, and we've shown support for each other in various ways. And I think that's maybe what we need more of in the blogging stuff. More like community stuff, and less focus on being like sort of like a girl boss.
Absolutely.
And like kicking ass at business and like making loads of money and showing off all your fancy things that you've got. Like, that's not authentic. Like, nobody lives like that in the real world. Like, I don't know, I'd rather just like find people more naturally.
No, and talking about that, let's talk about the time in Penang and the guys in Backdoor Bodega, how we met them. Shen, who's been on the podcast, how do you feel about how organically is that even a word? It was to make friends on that island?
Malaysia was brilliant. Like, at the start I was really ill. Like, Singapore to Malaysia was difficult. We did a lot of travelling in a short space of time.
Yeah.
I didn't eat very well. I had a very bad stomach and was very unhappy and still had to do work. So anyway, by the time we got to Penang, I had chilled out a bit.
Started to drink more rum.
I had started to drink more. And that may have helped.
Or not.
Anyway, so we went looking for a craft beer bar that we had been to in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah.
Because apparently they had a pop-up in Penang. And we walked down, it was like the first few nights of being there, we walked down so many weird, strange side streets and taking in all the sights of Penang, which is sort of all old Chinese shop fronts with open drains, weird little bridges and all kinds of strange things. But it's very beautiful, I love it. And we finally get to the location of where this craft beer bar was supposed to be, only to find the venue is just dead. And the only thing that's there is in this corner is a little neon light and some concrete. And we were just about to go, and then this little guy comes out with his glasses, all cute, being like, oh, how are you? Are you okay? Like, do you like cocktails? And we were like, yes.
If there's no craft beer,
we'll have a cocktail or something. So we go into this lovely bar, and the decor is amazing. Like, it's super cool. Like, everyone who's in there is like, just so our vibes, like super amazing style, beautiful, amazing menu. And they do like, I had a matcha latte and you had a cocktail. I can't remember the exact one,
but it was good. I was drunk. It was great.
The concept known as Norm/Knocked, which belongs to our friend Shen,
and we'll link to it again and his podcast underneath.
So that's where we met Joseph first, who was our original Penang friend, and he also said to us that day, oh, like, if you like these cocktails, come to this secret door and you'll find some more brilliant cocktails. And of course, because we were in Traveling Vibes, we were like, of course, of course we'll come and find this mystery door.
We'd gone for a few mystery doors. We went for a few mystery doors. But that was by far the best. I don't want to say too much about that because I did the episode with Shen, which everyone can check out if they want to, and that was great. Let's kind of fast forward a bit now, because I think the rest of the trip was pretty much us more used to traveling, and it became more, would you say, daily life whilst traveling, and we started chilling out and staying in places longer.
We got used to it, and like, once we acknowledged that we could just stay somewhere if we liked it, and that as long as we were moving in accordance with the visa guidelines, that we could be flexible, like, it was much more chilled.
Yeah. So let's touch on our friends Lindsay and Matt in Chiang Mai. Because that kind of relates to what we're doing now. So how did you know them? What are they doing? It was lovely hanging out with them.
Yeah, it was so weird to reconnect with them. Like I've only met Matt like a couple of times briefly, but Lindsay, I was the photographer who photographed one of my first ever modelling photo shoots.
Yeah.
And then after that, she also got me involved in a photo shoot where I modelled a graduate's fashion collection whilst also posing with vintage pistols. So we were obviously on the same wavelengths, and we got on very well. Got invited to her wedding, but unfortunately couldn't go. So I kind of just had her on Facebook this whole time, and like, I knew that she'd like left England, but I didn't really keep that much in touch. But obviously when we went to Asia, I obviously sent her a message to be like, I'm going to be in Asia, what should we do? And we started chatting a bit, and like I say, she introduced us to the Nomad Girls community. And it was Lindsay who actually suggested Trusted Houses to us, which is what we're now doing currently. And Matt and Lindsay are sort of experts in sort of animal welfare, and they use the website for their home in Thailand when they come back to England. So we were just like, okay, this sounds interesting. Let's look this up when we get a chance. And we didn't look it up straight away.
We didn't. It was months. I think it was months. We were hanging out with our friends, Evald and Angie.
In Vietnam. In Hanoi.
At Warning Bar, which is a really cool place. And it just came... I think we were talking about what to do next. We weren't sure what to do next. The weather there was miserable and cold, so I think we kind of got a bit like, oh, we might want to go home.
Well, everyone was in those vibes, though. It was so weird.
I think that's why, because it was Christmas time. Everyone was feeling a bit weird. I think in retrospect, we could have probably stayed out longer. But we also had some work opportunities that then didn't work out that we thought were going to work out. But let's talk about the actual day of filling out the Trusted Houses site. So how long would you say we spent filling out the actual profile? Or do you want to describe what the website is a little bit first?
Okay, so Trusted Houses is based on sharing economy, and it is basically a similar format to Airbnb, except that no money is involved except for like your annual subscription, which is I think 65
quid, I think.
Yeah, £65 if you get it on a discount code. I wouldn't imagine it would go above 100 ever.
And we've got a code for it, a discount code
for
it in the description.
Yeah, we'll put a discount code in the description. And people can put up a listing when they go on holiday of asking for people to come and look after their house and or animals. And in exchange for looking after their animals and home, you get free accommodation and you get to hang out in cool places that you might not get to go to and meet different people and different types of animals. And it basically means that animals get a more humane, easier going time than if they went to the kennels or if they were to travel with you or whatever.
Yeah, awesome. So when I started researching online, because I think we got back after having this conversation with some mates being like, oh, someone had mentioned this to us. I got back and researched it some more. And I was a bit like, if we're going to pay 60 quid, I'm going to see what other people are saying. And everyone, other than one blog post, was very much like, oh, it didn't work that well for me. I only got one or two replies. And then there's one blog post that said that they'd spent ages filling out their profile properly and had saved a bunch of money on accommodation, and they'd actually only used it like 5 or 6 times, but the worth of the houses they were doing was like loads. So how long would you say it was from us starting to fill it out to booking our first accommodation?
Well, it was a bit of a weird time because as well as the work prospects that you mentioned before, I was also interviewing for other work prospects.
Yeah, you were.
That were potentially bringing us back to the UK, and they didn't work out either. So I was kind of just like, you just deal with it, Miz. You set up the system and then I'll look at it. So you actually set it up and wrote the profile. And obviously our background's in writing and marketing, so we know how to pitch ourselves. So yeah, if you want stuff for free, you've got to put work in for it. It's not straightforward. So yeah, we did spend a lot of time on it and we did put good pictures up.
Yeah.
And get proper references. But the longest bit was probably the applying for sits and arranging the calls with people who wanted to have calls and all that. It's like a million interviews.
It's true. But is that because we're doing it full time, so we're trying to do them back to back as opposed to holiday as well?
Of course, yeah. If you were just going to use Trusted House Sitters just for a holiday or for like half the year, you wouldn't have to put that much work in that often to fulfil your accommodation needs. But yeah, if you want to do it full time, you have to treat it like a job.
And when we're talking about full time, how many house sits roughly, we've got the list up, I'm not going to count them whilst doing the podcast, roughly have we done so far in the 9 months we've been doing it?
I think the house that we're currently at is house sit number 30 maybe.
So in 9 months, we've moved 30 times.
Well, no, because it's more than that. Because when we weren't at house sits, we were in Airbnbs or visiting people. So it's more houses than 30 houses,
if you
include that. Cool. Which I haven't added up yet, but I will make 13, an infographic for one
like
day.
40-ish to 45 houses, let's say, in 9 months. So a hell of a lot of houses. How tiring does that get?
Well, I don't mind if I'm at somewhere for like 2 weeks minimum, but recently we had a period of time where we just had 2 or 3 nights here and there and then an Airbnb, and then we did a trip to Barcelona, and that is too much. It's the same as what we said about in Asia, like you've got to find what your boundaries are, what your limitations are, and that's different for everyone, and you have to just be realistic of what suits you. And for me personally, like, it takes me a few days to settle somewhere. So to then settle somewhere and then immediately have to leave is not a good feeling all the time.
Yeah, for sure. And what about, like, for freelance, especially for us, when we work with a lot of different companies from different countries, the whole Brexit situation and it not being decided yet, and we'll know obviously more at the end of the month, hopefully, has been a weird one, and we've not earned as much as normal. But how much would we have spent on rent roughly? We've got booked up roughly till January. How much would we have spent by January on rent if we hadn't been using Trusted Houses?
Well, probably about £13,000. So we have not had to spend £13,000 that we would have had to spend if for like a year.
Yeah. And if we take into account some of the stuff that's happened, because we've had, what, one car blow up.
We've had three cars now.
We've had three cars because, so, like, stuff goes wrong. We've had clients, like, go. We've had months that haven't been, like, clients haven't paid us. We've had loads of stuff that's happened. So, how would you describe, like, obviously there's differences and we could go and work full-time somewhere. But having the flexibility to do something like that, what would you say it does for you?
Well, I found it a bit strange because I thought that the flexibility would make it easier. But I guess because our current situation is a bit strange to a lot of people, I think it maybe just is confusing people. So, for example, like, we have been applying for jobs that we would be willing to relocate for, but people are so set on you being already living in the town that the job is in to either go and interview there or to just know the area or whatever, that it's not necessarily as great as I thought in that respect. The positive side of it is that it takes off massive pressure, so that if you are going through a career transition or a personal life transition, like, it's taken a lot of financial pressure off so that we had free time to explore new opportunities, such as this podcast and my art. Like, they were both things that we wanted to do for a long time. Because we were always grinding to, like, make the rent every month, we didn't have the headspace to do it properly.
Yeah.
So now we have more headspace most of the time, depending on how much we're traveling.
So I'm not sure how good my editing will be, but if anyone who is listening can hear rustling about, it's because we are pet sitting at the moment and we're looking up, well, you can describe who we're looking after.
We've got two border collies, one is currently licking my hand and the other one is just staring lovingly into Miz's eyes.
I think they want to be fed. So I think we're almost done, but I've got a few quick questions I want to just throw your way. So what would you say is the thing you've learned that sticks with you the most in the year and a half we've been without having our own home?
No matter how much you try, there'll always be problems. So kind of like, it's pretty difficult to prepare for problems that you can't predict, but I think I've tried to learn to be more relaxed about when things do go wrong, which is obviously better for my health and better for everyone.
Yeah.
And the travel especially has helped me be more open-minded about everything, like, and more thoughtful about different cultures and different traditions. And I think that's really important for anyone to experience, is if you have the opportunity to go and experience a different culture firsthand, even if it's just like Scotland, like somewhere close, go and do it, because it is different and you do learn a lot.
Buy a Bath and Mars bar, they're great. And what about something that I've been talking to a lot of people about, listening to each other, to people when we're travelling, to other cultures and what they have to say, to their history? How important do you think that is?
I think it's really important, and I think people need to talk more and they need to stop having knee-jerk reactions to stuff based on common knowledge. Like, if you're going to argue something, you have to, like, do your research. And things are always way more complicated than they seem at first sight. Like, you go to Malaysia and you're like, oh, isn't it wonderful, this mashup of Indian and Chinese traditions to make this new Malaysian thing. But then when you go and research, like, colonialism and like, how there's difficulties with Chinese versus Muslim communities and stuff, like, it's not as great as it seems at first. Every country has its problems. Every country is a bit shitty. Like, just keep an open mind and try and be nice to each other.
Yeah, I think that's important. Anywhere you're looking forward to traveling the most?
I still really want to go to Japan, obviously. But it's probably one of the most expensive places I can suggest. So I'm keeping that on the back burner for now, but if anyone can send us to Japan, that would be lovely.
If anyone wants a podcast in Japan, we are happy travelling over. Jane, thank you. I'm going to have a beer now.
You already have a beer.
I'm going to have another beer.
Podcast finished. My entire career has been based around finding work via social media or the internet.
Thank you so much for checking out that episode of the podcast, and I really hope you enjoyed it. If there's any tips that we missed out, any links that we should have added in, or anything else you can think of, please let us know and we will add that into the description and try and cover it at some other time too. And if you did enjoy this episode, there's a bunch more that I really recommend listening to. The one with Alexander Travelbump is wonderful. We talk about full-time travel. The two episodes, one with Faris Jakob and one with Rosie Jakob, both of them run Genius Steals and work remotely as well. They have so much advice for people. And also the one with Benita Matowska, where we actually talk about sharing economy and we give some more details about trusted house sitters. So those are some episodes that I really recommend checking out. And again, if you enjoyed this one, please leave us a review. Give us a thumbs up, share it about, all that stuff helps us out incredibly. Thank you so much again and catch you next time.
My entire career has been based around finding work via social media or the internet. So it's in my nature to just go seeking opportunities online.